You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Funny dream? No, it's real. A cyber espionage crew operating against Southeast Asian governments. President Trump fires CISA Director Krebs. Twitter and Facebook CEOs testify before the Senate as legislators consider Section 230. The extradition hearing for Huawei's CFO continues in Vancouver. Joe Kerrigan looks at fleeceware on the Google Play Store. Rick Howard speaks with Tenable's Steve Vintz on Zero Trust. And the most common passwords in 2020 are now out, and password only comes in at number 4. Just wait till you hear number 1. From the CyberWire studios at Datatribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. Bitdefender researchers describe the activities of a hitherto little-remarked Chinese cyber-espionage group. It's called Funny Dream, after one of the tool sets it uses. Most of the group's infrastructure is located in Hong Kong, but with one additional server each in Vietnam, China proper, and the Republic of Korea. Bitdefender is cautious about attribution, not going much farther than Chinese or Chinese-speaking, and is also reticent about the targets, which it characterizes as potential government sector victims in Southeast Asia. This isn't the first time Funny Dream has come to researchers' attention. ZDNet points out that a Kaspersky report this past spring found Funny Dream activity mostly directed against Vietnam, with additional targets in Malaysia, Taiwan, and the Philippines. As an aside on nomenclature, may we say we miss the pandas? Are we out of adjectives for pandas? They couldn't have called this one, say, Next Door Panda or Karen Panda or Takeout Panda. I love pandas. Last night, President Trump fired Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Director Christopher Krebs. In the two-tweet thread he used to announce the dismissal, President Trump called Director Krebs' assurance that the recent U.S. elections were secure highly inaccurate, and gave that assessment as his grounds for the firing. The move had been expected for several days, with speculation that Director Krebs was in White House hot water, having circulated since the middle of last week at least. At issue, apparently, were repeated assurances by the CISA director that there was no evidence of any systematic large-scale hacking of voting systems. Krebs's work at CISA had received good bipartisan international and industry reviews. He was generally well-regarded in the cybersecurity sector. The Wall Street Journal and SC Media are among the publications that summarize reactions to his dismissal. We've seen few comments that approve of the firing. Most of those in and around the cybersecurity sector think he'd been doing a good, focused, and nonpartisan job throughout his tenure. It's worth noting that Krebs had long publicly explained before and during Election Day that unofficial results reported by the media were just that, unofficial. He had also publicly insisted, right up to the 11th hour, that the election wasn't going to be over until any necessary recounts had been conducted and all the votes certified. Everyone should expect, he said, that process to take weeks. These have been at least as clearly the themes of his public statements as have his reassurances about security. In fairness, this seems hardly the sort of thing a shill for hostile partisans would be likely to emphasize. May all honest counting and recounting continue. Matthew Travis, who had been deputy director, is also reported to have resigned. CISA hasn't updated its leadership page yet, but it would appear that the agency will be run on acting basis by its executive director, Brandon Wales. Good luck, Mr. Krebs. Many will miss the quiet voice and the loud socks. Twitter's CEO Dorsey and Facebook CEO Zuckerberg described their platform's approach to election season disinformation before a Senate panel yesterday. The Wall Street Journal says both gave their companies good marks, but they signaled their openness to further regulation. The hearings are considering the future of Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, a law which many legislators of both parties believe the internet in general and social media platforms in particular have outgrown. Section 230 presently gives social media the protections of both publishers and public squares, exemption of liability for what's said on them combined with the ability to moderate the content they permit. Those sets of protections have long been in tension. They may be reaching the point of contradiction. Both Mr. Dorsey and Mr. Zuckerberg testified remotely. Their video appearances show one leveling effect of technology. Even captains of industry look as bad as the rest of us do when we're on Zoom. The Vancouver extradition hearings for Huawei CFO Meng Wanzhou continue. Reuters reports that a Canada Border Services Agency official testified that he was not pressured into improper actions by the U.S. FBI. Ms. Meng's counsel had maintained that the Bureau strong-armed the CBSA into violating Canadian legal norms. And finally, you'd think people would have moved towards stronger passwords after all the nudging in that direction from, well, just about everywhere. Not necessarily. Here are the top 10 passwords of the year 2020, as reported by NordPass. Let's go a little old school with this. Counting backwards from 10, we have number 10, Senha, which is Portuguese for password. Thanks, Brazil. Number 9, 123456789090. 10 digits, but all digits, and counting numbers to boot. Number 8, 12345. Only half as good as number 9. Number 7, 123123. Number 6, 111111. We have nothing to add to those two. Number 5, 123456789. Number 4, password. You saw that one coming, right? Number 3, picture 1. Number 2, 123456789. And coming in at number 1, up one place from last year, is the ever popular 123456, now used by 2,543,285 users. That NordPass could find, that is. You know who you are. We'll be right back.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
The CyberWire's chief analyst and chief security officer, Rick Howard, recently checked in with Tenable's chief financial officer, Steve Vintz, for his insights on Zero Trust. Here's their conversation.
We are joined by Steve Vintz. He's the chief financial officer for Tenable. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You wrote an essay in CFO Australia last month about how the CISOs are becoming more important to people like you at the senior executive staff. Why don't you give us a rundown on what that essay said?
Sure. We talked a lot about the maturation of the role of the chief security officer and the chief information security officer, and how the security team needs to evolve their strategy and become better partners with the C-suite. In turn, I believe the C-suite needs to also evolve and recognize the value and the contributions of the chief security officer as an important executive on the team. And I believe there's a disconnect in how businesses understand and manage security risk.
Well, I totally agree. And I've been part of that problem myself in my former CSO roles, right? That my peers and I have always had trouble conveying transforming cyber risk into business risk. We just didn't have the language to do it. And I was wondering if the CFOs of the world could help us figure that out.
In terms of business leaders, you know, what I can tell you is business leaders want a clear picture of their organization's cybersecurity posture, but their security counterparts struggle to provide one. And so when we look at security, I think the problem today is that there's no common language. When you pose that question, how secure are we? You don't typically get an answer that's based on the maturity framework of an organization and a couple of key metrics. And there's not a clear articulation of that.
I would pose to you that that's the wrong question, all right, or at least a hard question to answer. I would rephrase it, and I've been on a glide path to try to get this out there. But the real question that CISO should be answering to people like you, the CFO, is what's the probability that we are going to be materially impacted by a cybersecurity event in, say, the next 3 years? I think that's an answerable question. I don't know. What do you think about that,
Rick? I agree with where you're coming from, because you cannot, I'm not proposing that you can eliminate security risk. And by the way, I'm the CFO. I'll stay in the shallow end of the pool when it comes to technical matters on security. But I do think that I understand, you know, business risk, and you can't, the only thing you can do, I believe, is do a series of things that reduces risk to a relatively acceptable level. I don't think there's a clear articulation. I think we're becoming better as an organization. I think boards are becoming better, but I think there's a long ways to go in that regard.
All good stuff, Steve. Thanks for joining us on this interview at the CyberWire, and hope to come back with us. And I'd love to talk to you again about the progress you're making there.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
That's our own Rick Howard speaking with Tenable's Steve Vintz.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute, also my co-host over on the Hacking Humans podcast. Joe, great to have you back.
Hi, Dave.
Interesting article caught my eye. This is from the folks over at ThreatPost. This one's written by Tara Seals. And it's titled, Minecraft Apps on Google Play Fleece Players Out of Big Money. What's going on here, Joe?
What's going on here, Dave, is someone has realized that it's perfectly legitimate within the ecosystem of these app stores to have a very high cost for a subscription, like to an app. And that's what they've done. So they've built these apps. There's like seven of them that they've built. And Avast thinks it's all the same developer who's done this. Mm-hmm. And these are apps like mods and maps for Minecraft PE, skins for Roblox, live wallpapers, HD and 3D backgrounds, these kind of apps. And what happens is when you install this, you get a free 3-day trial period. And after that, the app starts charging you $29.99 a week for the app.
Okay.
Right.
All righty.
So what's interesting is that it's in order to see this in the Google Play Store, when you look at the app, you know, first you have to search the app and you find the app, and then you have to click on a little arrow on the right-hand side to read the entire description. And all the way down at the bottom of that description, it talks about the terms and conditions that we're going to bill you $30 a week for the trial after the trial period. That's anywhere from $120 to $150 a month. That's a lot of money.
Yes.
The article points out, rightly so, that one of the biggest issues here is that this is something that children will install because Minecraft is very popular with a very wide age group of people. Right. I have a copy of it. I play it. I don't play it on my phone, but I do play it sometimes. I haven't played it lately, but I have played it on my PC for a long time. And it's a fun game. It's also a game that's perfectly fine for children to play, right?
Sure.
And they're the ones that are not going to read the terms and conditions or understand what they're applying to or what they're agreeing to. And they're just going to click the yes button because – you know, they're young. And then their parents are going to see these charges coming through on their credit card from Google Play. And they're going to be like, what is this? What's going on here? Mm-hmm. Of course, you can request a refund from this. But, you know, I don't know how you stop this aside from Google saying, okay, this is fleeceware. Because I can imagine a situation, and we were talking about this before we started recording. A good example of this is Adobe. Adobe charges $70 a month for a business to have a license to all their products.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, it's expensive for what it is, but there are legitimate business cases where you can have an app that's in high demand by a specific group of people that provides a real benefit, but is not cheap. Right.
And
that's a good business model. But in this case, they're calling it fleeceware because it doesn't match the rest of the market. Right.
Mm-hmm.
In order to buy Minecraft PE, that is a one-time $7 purchase from Mojang, which is now owned by Microsoft.
Right.
But in order to have an app that augments or allegedly augments the other game, it's $30 a month. or a week rather, $30 a week. That's not right. That's not what this business model is meant to, that is certainly outside of the spirit of what Google Play and even the Apple Store. And the article talks about the Apple Store having similar issues. Google has, as of this recording, not removed these apps from the store. They're still available. I just found one and did the search on it. That's how I know that you have to hit that little arrow to read the entire description.
Yeah. It strikes me that there's a couple ways that these scammers come at this. You know, they're the ones who they all start out with something that's free. So for X number of days, you get this thing for free.
Right.
And it seems like a lot of times they'll come after you, or they'll lure you in with something where it's an app of limited utility, but when you need it, you need it. You know, something like a QR code reader or something like that. Something it doesn't do a whole lot, but the thing it does is useful and you need it now. And you're not shopping around all that much, and you see free QR code reader and you say, aha, that's for me. And you download it. And but then afterwards, it strikes me that there's a couple ways that they come at this. They either try to hit you with something big, like in this case, $30 a week.
Right.
And hope that it's just too much of a pain to try to claw back, you know, the $30, the $60, or however much they get. And so they just take that money and run.
Right.
The other way they come at it is they charge you something like $1 a week. And they hope to fly under the radar for as long as possible. It's more of a numbers game, right?
Yes, yes. That's the way I'd do it. I try with the low amount. If I was doing this, I'm not doing this.
Okay, fair enough. So I guess the take home here is what? If you've got kids, take a look at, make sure that, I guess first of all, tell them,
don't just install anything.
Right.
Make sure they understand what's going on. Educate them. When that doesn't work, if you have kids that don't listen to you, who has kids that listen to everything they say? I'd like to meet that parent. You can create a user account on the device for the kid that prevents them from installing apps.
Mm-hmm. But also, you know, keep an eye on that credit card that, you know,
right. Make sure. And generally, generally speaking, on the phone, that's not really something you can do. If a kid says, "Can I play with your phone?" and they start installing these apps, they're going to be doing it as you, right? Mm-hmm. So then you're going to have to keep an eye on the credit card. You can request refunds. And you can say, you know, my kid installed this and it wasn't meant. And that's actually in the Google refund policy that, you know, if a family member installs something, let us know and we'll refund your money.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Security is a competitive advantage. Right.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Dave.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Something special's in the air. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now, a word from our sponsor, SixthSense. SixthSense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With SixthSense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly.
To learn why enterprises choose Sixth Sense, visit sixthsense.com.